This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Tuesday, March 4th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we'll look at the state of arts education in Illinois. And we'll have a look at a wintry AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, a look at today's news. Jury selection resumes this morning in the trial of Tony Rezko. He's the political insider currently on trial for corruption and fraud. Ben Calhoun has more.
So far, Federal District Judge Amy St. Eve has interviewed just over 40 potential jurors and is expected to interview as many as 50 or 60 more before the jury is selected. During yesterday's interviews, Tony Rezko often fidgeted with heavy stacks of paper on the table in front of him. Several times, he smiled and winked at the half-dozen friends and relatives watching from the gallery. Because of the high-profile nature of the case, potential jurors have faced a lot of questions about their ability to avoid media coverage. Rezko was formerly a prolific political fundraiser, funneling campaign money to people with names like Madigan, Daley, Stroger, Burke, Bush, and Obama. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is closely linked to the corruption allegations against Rezko. Jury selection is expected to be completed by tomorrow at the latest. I'm Ben Calhoun.
A downstate court is once again ordering Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich to make public information about federal subpoenas. Monday's ruling comes after the governor's office released two subpoenas late last week. Tony Arnold has that story.
The governor's office didn't make the subpoenas public until a watchdog group sued under the Freedom of Information Act. Jay Stewart heads the Better Government Agency. He says the court ruling shows there are more subpoenas to be released, but he can't say how many.
In terms of the here and now, we won again. The governor lost again because the law's not on his side.
Stewart says the subpoenas released last week show federal prosecutors might be looking at hiring practices in the governor's office. The governor's office has the option of appealing the court decision. A spokesperson did not immediately return phone calls. I'm Tony Arnold.
Urbana will contest Ameren's proposed rate increase, but Mayor Laurel Prossing says she's not certain that state regulators will give them a fair hearing. We get more from AM 580's Jim Meadows.
The Urbana City Council voted last night to join with Champaign in intervening in the Ameren rate case now before the Illinois Commerce Commission. For cities and villages, Ameren's rate hike request would mean higher bills for street lighting, an additional $100,000 a year in Urbana's case. Intervention will allow Champaign and Urbana to view documents filed by Ameren and to present their own arguments to the ICC. But Urbana Mayor Laurel Prossing says she's not sure they'll get a fair hearing.
Well, I think that the ICC has earned a reputation for siding with the people that they're supposed to be regulating, and that's not really what their job is.
Urbana will pay $16,700 for its share of the cost of intervening in the Ameren case, but Prossing says that cost would go down if other cities decide to join in. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
An East Central Illinois lawmaker is seeking a concrete plan to address poverty in Illinois. A bill sponsored by Champaign Senator Mike Frericks would assemble a task force to come up with specific recommendations in areas like access to affordable housing, education, health care, and transportation. The aim of the commission is to eliminate extreme poverty by 50% or more in Illinois by the year 2015. Those in such conditions are earning $10,000 or less annually for a family of four. Frericks says many are under the impression this issue is centered on the Chicago area, when he says Champaign and Vermilion counties produced similar numbers.
And it's true that the university produced a lot of good-paying jobs with benefits, but we have sort of the hidden poor in our community. And they're people who don't get a lot of media attention. They're not very vocal about it. People are living in tough times, and it's not something they really want to advertise or feel confident talking about.
Champaign, Vermilion, Coles, and Macon counties each have poverty rates of 5% or higher. The task force would be made up of lawmakers, various agencies, advocates for the disabled, as well as people who have experienced extreme poverty. Proposed short-term solutions include adding capital funds to expand the number of affordable housing units and expanding the Temporary Aid to Needy Families, or TANF, program. The bill creating the commission awaits action in a Senate committee. Indiana lawmakers negotiating a massive property tax plan. focused Monday on how to give homeowners tax relief while minimizing the financial hit to local governments and schools. Republicans and Democrats on a House Senate Conference Committee. Republicans and Democrats on a House Senate Conference Committee met for a second time on a proposal that would cap property tax bills. The bill would also shift some local levies to the state and increase the sales tax to help pay for the relief. One of the biggest sticking points in negotiations will likely be finding a way to deal with the effects of the caps on schools and local governments. Caps on property tax bills mean schools and local governments would receive nearly $600 million less in revenue than expected, which some officials have said could lead to cuts in services like public safety. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Foster. No Child Left Behind has been all over the news for years. We've all heard about the legislation's impact on testing and schools. But some educators think there's an unintended consequence for a childhood ritual. Lynette Kalsness has this story.
Field trips to see dinosaur bones, art museums, or a performance of Peter and the Wolf are a staple of childhood, like these kids figuring out how to work a water wheel at the Chicago Children's Museum.
Where does that water come from? Where did you get your water this morning?
From the sink.
The sink. And where did that water come from?
This particular workshop on water meets state language art goals 4 and 5, science goals 11 and 12, and social science goal 17A. That's the information that many principals and teachers need to justify field trips these days. Elizabeth Babcock heads the Field Museum's education department.
They say, you know, I would love to come see your exhibition, but we have to show a certain percentage of improvement on our standardized test, and that means we need to drill and practice in our classroom, and I'm not sure that I can take a day out of school to come on a field trip.
The legislation lets each state set its own standards for what kids need to learn. Although Illinois includes the fine arts and social science in its goals, kids only get tested on math, reading, science, and writing. So field trips involving history or the arts are seen as expendable. Babcock says that's a shame.
Learning from the textbook is not the same as coming in and looking at a 2,000-year-old sandal made by somebody who was actually one of your ancestors.
The number of field trips to Chicago's major museums dropped 17% since the year 2000, according to Museums in the Park. Museum educators figure that's due, in part, to No Child Left Behind. They're concerned enough about the legislation to hold a seminar later this month called No Museum Left Behind.
Well, you would never get myself or the secretary to ever say or believe that museums are expendable, and that's not what we're saying at all.
Christine Cohn is the U.S. Department of Education's top regional official.
We believe that all boys and girls need to be able to read and do math at grade level.
And Cohn says that will make field trips more meaningful. That's just what some museum educators here are trying to do. In addition to the Children's Museum, several institutions, including the Art Institute, the National Museum of Mexican Art, and the Museum of Science and Industry, have looked at their exhibits and listed how they meet state learning standards.
I'll watch it!
Back at the Children's Museum, the students make an aqueduct out of rubber tubing and plumbing connectors. They pour water into their contraption to see if it will work. Wilma Gray, a teacher at J.N. Thorpe Elementary School, says field trips like this reinforce her lessons.
You can see little lights going on in their head. Oh, I should know that answer. I don't believe that you can teach how to behave by staying at the school. You have to bring them out in order to teach them how to behave.
One of the chaperones is parent Hilda Aguirre.
Field trips are good. I mean, it takes some pressure off the kids. It relaxes them a little because I know my kid gets a little tense around test time, so, and I know ISATs are coming up, and you know, it's a lot of pressure on him.
The Children's Museum and the Field are among the museums that are bringing the field trip directly to the classroom. The Field Museum's Andy Hirschberger unloads 6 boxes of African instruments from his trunk.
Hello, Mr. Andy.
Hello.
Hirschberger is at Clissold Elementary School on Chicago's south side to teach a class called Africa's Beat. He pulls out a map of Africa and talks about the desert and the people. Then he passes around instruments.
Roll it in your hands.
Kindergartner Damian Evans has a whole list of what he's learned from field trips.
Different classes about animals and stuff, and like people, statues in different countries, and different animals and different planets.
In addition to raising test scores, museum educators say the law is forcing them to reach out to teachers to see what they actually need. And Nathan Ritchie of the Freedom Museum says that's a good thing. But the downside is the risk of making history and the arts less important.
When you put standards on math, science, and literacy specifically, you're saying, okay, these three things are alone what's most important for a kid's education.
Ritchie says the irony here is the disadvantaged schools need to spend so much time teaching to the tests and administering practice tests, they have the least time for field trips. And those are precisely the schools that No Child Left Behind intends to help. I'm Lynette Kalsnes.
In the forecast for today, cloudy, snow arriving this morning, mixed at times with sleet and freezing rain, windy and colder, the high 32. We'll have winds from the northeast at 15 to 25 miles per hour, gusting to 30. Total expected accumulation of snow between 3 and 5 inches. Cloudy skies tonight, snow tapering to flurries late this evening, the low 20. Winds from the north at 15 to 25 miles per hour, diminishing after midnight. Partly sunny, the high around 40 tomorrow. Winds from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour, mostly cloudy Wednesday evening, a chance of snow, the low 24. Partly sunny Thursday, the high 32. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, March 4th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.